In the name of the gardener who still digs fertilizer around fruitless fig trees. Amen. They don't make profits the way they used to. Case in point, Ezekiel chapter 1. Do you know there is a whole subculture that is convinced that what Ezekiel saw in the sky, these wheels spinning in wheels, were in fact UFOs? Just Google it. Or Ezekiel chapter 5. When Ezekiel had his own personal St. Baldrick's, except that none of the money went to charity. The dude shaves his head, and he takes a third of it, and he burns it in the city center. Then he takes a third of it, and he nips it into little pieces as he's walking around town. And then the last third of it, he just scatters to the wind. And the people are supposed to know what it symbolizes. And we haven't even gotten to chapter 37 yet, when that valley stacked with dry bones begins to rattle and hum. They don't make profits the way they used to. But here at chapter 33, we're not so much watching what Ezekiel does as we are listening and eavesdropping, really, to what the voice of the Lord still has in store for Ezekiel to say. And it is a tall order. And his life now depends on how he carries it out, on what he observes as the watchman of the Lord. All this righteousness and woe, this blood required at your hand, this turn back, turn back, turn back. They don't make profits the way they used to. But even then, everything for Ezekiel hinges actually on what happens right after this reading. Verse 21. In the 12th year of our exile, in the 10th month, on the 5th day of the month, a fugitive from Jerusalem came and said, "The city has been struck down." The year is 586 BC. And we know what happens in 586 BC, right? The destruction of the holy city. And with it, the dream of a nation. You don't have to study the Hebrew Bible long to know that the trauma of 586 BC turns the hinge on what came before to what will come after. And to see how the dream of any nation can quickly turn to dust. But for the prophet, this is how exile turns to restoration, how judgment begins to turn to hope, even how silence can turn to something close to a song, even if the song is a lament. The blues. And perhaps it's no less true for this exile we call Lent. How the catastrophes, how our own personal towers falling can break the silence, can bring us back to our senses. Assuming, of course, there are still prophets around to show us where hope may yet still lie. Of course, there was never a prophet like the one who came after Ezekiel, the one who proclaimed good news to poor people, release to captives, freedom for the ones who really know what it's like to be oppressed. He could do it because he wasn't just a watchman. He was the gardener, And what he proclaimed wasn't just to describe what he observed. What he proclaimed actually made those things happen. And in the turning from the one thing to the other, what he proclaimed turned everything on its head. Least to greatest, first to last. So much so that his life will depend on it too. And when it came time to reckon what was required of wickedness, it was his blood on all of our hands. And we would have thought that was the end of the story. Except that the voice of the Lord will still speak, and in its words, the promise will be kept, and in its breath, this man's bones will begin to rattle and hum. The sinews of muscle and skin would begin to pulse again and blush. And he will live and breathe and get up to stand on his own two feet, an exceedingly great army of one. And then, when the grave opens, we will know what it means when we hear the voice say, "My spirit is within you. You shall live. I am the Lord." Amen.